That's just old-fashioned language, right? So Micah was asking earlier where the material from the class is. Let me remind you, if you go to my website, evidenceforchristianity.org, one of the buttons is something like, I don't know, Christian Evidences class or whatever. And there you'll find all the notes, all the PowerPoints, and all the audios for this class. He also asked me if we're done tonight, and I said, well, no, not exactly, but we're going to stop tonight. In other words, tonight will be the last class. There's some material I kind of wanted to do, but I'm running out of energy. Probably some of you are as well. So this is going to be the last class. I will put material at the website for the class I'm not doing. The title of that is Answering the Hard Questions. Actually, a fair number of those hard questions will be answered tonight. So, as usual, I'm going to ask, before we start, before I do my PowerPoint, are there any questions based on what we've covered so far?
I just wanted to follow up on the test of an unfaithful wife.
But you didn't send me an email. Remember, you're supposed to send me an email or a text. Oh, you put it in the chat. Keenan, I'm sorry. Oh. I knew I'd forget if you didn't send me a text or an email. All right, so send me a text or an email, please. Sorry about that. I'm putting my phone number here for a text in the chat. The one that I didn't look at. Sorry about that. Okay, so sorry about that. I will answer your question, Keenan, I promise. I answer all questions that come into my website. And by the way, you can send me the question through the website as well. Okay? Good, I see that thumbs up. Excellent. Any other questions other than the one I just refused to answer? Okay. Yeah, there aren't a whole lot of questions I say, you know what, I'm not sure, I need to do a little research. Every once in a while it happens. But if I don't have a good answer, I don't like to pretend that I do, you know what I'm saying? That's just a really bad idea. Alright, so here's our topic for tonight. Let's see if we get lucky. And the slideshow works right away. It probably won't, because it never seems to. Let's see here. Come on now. Oh yeah! Excellent. So, this class is on worldview. Worldview apologetics. Now, when I first did a book many years ago, Reasons for Belief, I thought I'd done a fairly, you know, basic level, but fairly thorough coverage of the most important topics related to evidence for Christianity. But since that time, through getting to know a good friend named Bob Kirka, who's a professor of worldview, essentially, I decided that the apologetics related to worldview apologetics is essential. And it's especially essential, not for the old people that are here tonight, but for the younger generation. In a postmodern world, in a post-Christian world, for that matter, we can no longer assume, for example, that people assume that there's authoritative truth. So we have to begin our apologetics with younger people by looking at worldview often. So that's what we're going to do tonight. And by the way, I published a book. It came out just last year, True, Right, Better. There's a copy of it there. You go to my publisher, IPI, pick up a copy. That book is much more thorough. In fact, there are worldviews I'm literally not even going to cover tonight. I'm going to cover the ones that are most important, most likely anybody you meet in America today, well, or overseas for that matter, will have one of the worldviews we're going to talk about tonight. Okay? The leading worldviews, accepted worldviews in the universities today are essentially modernism or naturalism or materialism and postmodernism. And by the way, if we're talking about America as a whole, I would say Christian theism. In fact, possibly Christian theism is still the plurality, the largest number of Americans would probably hold to the worldview that we think of as Christian theism. So I'm going to go over different worldviews, but I'm going to start with these two, because they're the dominant ones, especially for me working on a campus situation. These are the ones I come across all the time. Okay, worldview. Let's talk about what worldview is. The first definition is one that I use in my book. The second one is one that I think is a well-known definition. So one's worldview is the perspective one uses to process and interpret information received about the world. In other words, we see something, we observe something, we read something, we hear something, and we get information, and then we decide the meaning based on our worldview. All right? And so if you have a mystical worldview, you'll take a mystical perspective on the information you receive. If you have a postmodern worldview, you will use postmodernism as the filter through which you see and interpret what you see. And everybody has a worldview. Even if you don't know what your worldview is, you can't help but have one. All right? James Sire wrote, I think, the most well-known book on worldview, from a Christian perspective anyway. It's called The Universe Next Door, which I highly recommend that book. And he says, a worldview is a set of presuppositions which we hold about the basic makeup of our world. In other words, how do we think the universe works? What determines what happens? And it is a set of presuppositions. So a worldview apologetic is an examination of the validity of presuppositions. So we as Christians have certain presuppositions that we make. Now, possibly we're aware of our presuppositions and can suspend them in order to think about questions. Most people, though, have an accepted worldview that they simply use and apply without carefully thinking about it. Okay? So the major worldviews that are out there that you're going to run across people are naturalism. Technically, atheism is not a worldview, but materialism or naturalism is. Postmodernism, deism is not a real common worldview, but in the scientific realm, it is a fairly common worldview. I'm going to define these as we go along. Pantheism, polytheism, and animism are sort of dying worldviews in some ways. Most primitive cultures were animistic. They tended to evolve into polytheistic worldviews. Some Native Americans would be animist. There are still quite a number of Native or indigenous religions in Africa. In the New Testament world, the Old Testament world, polytheism was the most common worldview. Dualism, another worldview like yin and yang. A lot of Chinese philosophy is dualistic. Zoroastrianism. There were two or three religions in Jesus' time. Zoroastrianism, Manichaeism, which are dualist religions, which is basically the idea that there are two competing evil and good forces in the world, that sort of thing. And then biblical theism. I could add Islamic theism to that. Okay, so those are some of the main worldviews. All right, so the thesis of my book is that Christianity is by far the preferred worldview based on the three qualifications or qualities that makes a good worldview. Number one, a worldview is good if it's true. Now, obviously, if your worldview is wrong, that's a problem because you're interpreting information through an assumption about the world, which is false, and that's going to lead you to all kinds of false conclusions. Now, by true, what I mean is consistent with reality. In other words, if the worldview that you hold is consistent with the information we can observe commonly as human beings, I'm going to argue that Christianity hands down wins on this parameter. Number two, it successfully answers the important questions humans really care about. I'm going to give you a list of those questions. I think it's on the next screen. Yes, okay. In fact, I'll just go there. So every human being I've ever known really, really cares about a certain list of questions. What is a person? You know, what am I? Am I simply an animal, or what am I? A bag of chemicals? Person with a soul? What happens to a person at death? Another one that's not on this list is, where did I come from? Or why am I here? What's my purpose? What is my value? How do I determine what's right and wrong? What's my relationship with any sort of ultimate reality if one exists? These are the questions everybody cares about. Okay? And again, I'm going to argue that Christianity provides by far the best answers to those lists of questions. The third one might seem like a little fishy. The third one is those who ascribe to this worldview, in other words, not just believe in it, but actually live consistently with this worldview, will be better human beings for having taken this as their worldview. Now, you could say, well, better, that's all subjective. Maybe yes, maybe no. So I would claim that if you put a atheist, a postmodernist, a deist, a pantheist, an animist, a dualist, and a biblical theist in a room and say, you need to come up with a list of 6, 7, 8 qualities that make for a good person. I believe that, and they'd have to come to consensus. I believe that would be a fairly simple task. Honest, kind, open-minded, you know, courageous, these things. And so, again, I'm going to argue that as we look at these different worldviews, Christianity by far meets this criteria better than any other. Got it? All right, so first we're going to look at naturalism, scientific materialism. Again, I'm going to go through that one pretty quickly. We're going to subject it to this set of three questions. The reason I'm going to go through this one more quickly than I normally do is because the first class we talked about the existence of God, and I did sort of a preliminary analysis of the naturalist worldview already. So I'm going to go through it pretty quickly. But materialism, by the way, materialism is not wanting to have lots of money and have lots of stuff. Materialism is the idea that only material things are real. Okay? Also known as naturalism. And it's closely related with determinism. The belief that the only reliable or valid instrument to deciding truth or even the value of any proposition is the scientific method. Only observable physical things are real. Everything else is literally not real. Now we're asked the question, is this true? If we take this as a worldview, does it answer those questions? And can we reasonably assume, if this is a worldview, that you will have those qualities that make for a good person? All right, materialism, a couple other definitions. We exist as material beings. I might have shown you this one earlier. As material beings in a material world, all of whose phenomena are the consequences of material relations amongst material entities. In a word, the public needs to accept materialism, which means they must put God in the trash can of history, which such myths belong. Okay, so in other words, only material things are real. All right, here's my definition of materialism. Life is explained in purely, qualities of materialism. Life is explained in purely material, mechanical terms. Phenomena such as mind and consciousness are considered epiphenomena. In other words, when we say mind, we think that our mind, like dualism, like Descartes, that mind is a thing in and of itself. But the materialists would say, no, it's just chemicals and electrical signals and just physical things. Curious byproducts of certain complex physical processes. Okay, now my response to this worldview is going to be that it's not true, that it doesn't answer the questions we care about, and if you accept it, that's dangerous. So it is a faith, religious belief based on circular reasoning. In other words, it's not true. It cannot answer the questions human beings really care about. As a worldview, it does not tend to make its followers better. In fact, it is downright dangerous. All right, I mentioned this BBC broadcast a few weeks ago, if probably almost all of you were there, in which a committed materialist was asked to give his opening statement. He basically said, materialism is my worldview. In other words, it's true that only physical things, measurable things are true. When they finally got him to answer the question how he knew that, his answer was, well, I guess I just believe it. In other words, he didn't have a reason argument to support his worldview. He just believes it. All right? Well, if you just believe something, that tends to draw into question whether it's true or not. I just believe that the moon is made out of cheese. Okay, that's nice. All right, just believing something, that's a terrible reason to believe in something. By the way, that's true of Christianity as well, just so you know. All right, and I'm going to argue that materialism is just plain not true. Now, what I mean by that is the physical world that we can observe, and not just the physical world, but the phenomena in the world that we live in, say that this is not true. Now, if materialism or naturalism is right, just so you know, then I do not exist. I am not a person per se. I'm just a collection of molecules and neurons and stuff like that. If it's true, then consciousness is just a random moving around of chemicals. If it's true, there's no soul, no spirit, and literally no non-physical reality at all. If this is true, then love is just neurotransmitters and neural networks firing in certain ways that are pre-programmed because of the experiences that you had and the chemistry of the brain that's determined by evolution, something like that. Here are some reasons I believe it is patently false. Number one, the universe is created. And all observation tells us, and I talked about this last week or the week before, tells us the universe was indeed created in an event that we call the Big Bang. And if the universe was created, that means there's a creator. It is an essentially inescapable fact. And one of the questions that we could have asked, which is a basic question, is why does anything exist at all? And scientific materialism says, because it does. That's not an answer. The universe is created, and I am absolutely convinced as a scientist, there is no way that life is not the result of some sort of supernatural creation event. All right, I could spend a couple hours on that. I'm just going to state it as if it were a fact, which you don't have to accept that, but to me it is. Life was created. And if life was created, then materialism or naturalism is false. Then we talked about the anthropic principle, the evidence for design. The evidence for design, which I spent a lot of time on, essentially proves, I mean, again, the reality of design is an inescapable observation. Now you could argue luck for that if you want. All right, but again, true is defined as consistent with our observation, and I would say our observation inexorably brings us to the conclusion that there is design, and therefore materialism is false. All right, and I would say I would use the moral argument to prove materialism wrong as well, but there you go. Like I said, science answers some important questions beautifully and fantastically with great precision, very efficiently. Science is great at answering what, when, where, how many, by what means, but science really sucks at answering any of the questions we actually care about. What is the right thing to do? Science, materialism says that's a bogus, that's a meaningless question. How valuable am I? I don't know, $6.13 in carbon, nitrogen, a little bit of iron, a little bit of manganese. All right, what is my purpose? What is my purpose? According to materialism, well, there is no purpose. Purpose and meaning are just meaningless concepts. Oh, wait, yeah, there is a purpose. Your purpose is to produce as many copies of your DNA as possible. Because that serves sort of the purpose, I guess, of what evolution, I guess. If that's true, imagine the acts you could justify if you believed your purpose was to create as many copies of your DNA as possible. Think about that. Is there such a thing as a miracle? I argued earlier in this class that science literally cannot answer that question. All right, so materialism is patently false. Materialism is literally the worst worldview in existence at answering the questions people really care about. And then the question is, are naturalists, atheists, determinists, materialists, are they made good because of the worldview? Well, if the naturalist is right, then good and evil are meaningless ideas. I'm telling you, that's a problem. If the naturalist is right, then our purpose, if it exists at all, which it probably doesn't, is to pass on our DNA. If the naturalist is right, any kind of sexual behavior is as right as any other kind. And I'm sorry, that is not true. And if the naturalist is right, there's nothing inherently evil about genocide. All right? And by the way, we hold these truths to be self-evident. All people are created equal. Not according to the naturalist. If the naturalist is correct, racism, slavery, many evil practices can be justified by this worldview. I'm not saying the average atheist defends slavery. I'm not saying that. In fact, my experience is most of the naturalists slash determinists I've met, actually, I've found to be relatively ethical people. But there is no moral support for anything in that worldview. All right, if the materialist is right, then justice is a meaningless word. The words ought and should are also meaningless. We must just take them out of our vocabulary. There's no such thing as sin or wrong behavior. And I would say this, naturalism as a worldview has been tried on a social, societal level by the Soviet Union and Communist China, Khmer Rouge, Cambodia, North Korea, arguably the French Revolution, and it's been a disaster every time. So, if materialism is true, then it's still a terrible worldview, but it's not true. It is not true. No wonder intellectuals in the early 20th century, and then the society as a whole in the second half of the 20th century, turned away from modernism and materialism towards postmodernism. So let's talk about that. Postmodernism, which basically says truth, if such a thing exists at all, is the property of culture. There is no absolute truth. All truth is relative. And truth is created by the societies that hold to them. There is no ultimate moral authority or moral absolute. Okay? Sounds very accepting. Sounds very open-minded. All right? And by the way, I'm going to argue that postmodernism as a sort of a art form, as a way of doing history, postmodernism has had some positive effects at the academic level in certain ways. For example, it's nowhere near as individualistic as the modernist perspective. Our culture is hyper-individualistic, but postmodernism has helped move somewhat away from that. It gives honor to culture, beauty, wonder, imagination. The modernist imagination is stupid. Culture is, you know, whatever. Beauty. It also, I believe, the postmodernist accepts the Eastern perspective, accepts multiple perspectives, not just worldviews, but just perspectives. It provides a more accurate view of history, I believe, than the modernist view, and it accepts, and I appreciate that the Western mindset is not the only valid one. However, there's some negatives about postmodernism. It's very confusing. It's essentially the non-worldview worldview. It's the worldview that there is no actual true worldview. Now we could ask whether that's true or not. We could ask how good a job that does at answering the questions we care about. And we could also ask whether that makes us a good person. But in this worldview, the idea of truth with a capital T is essentially eliminated. Truth becomes redefined as relative. Okay? So according to postmodernism, reality is constructed, not an actual thing. It's true for you, but it's not true for me, becomes a valid statement, which to me is crazy. Meaning exists not in absolute meaning, but in those who believe in that meaning. And there's no rational way to determine which is the best worldview. That sure is confusing. Now, there are two basic theories of truth. The first one, the correspondence theory of truth, says a statement is true, in quotes, if reality corresponds to that which is predicted by that statement. For example, I think that the theory of gravity is true. Let's test it out. Okay, great. Yeah, all right. So gravity is real. And if you believe it's not real because of your awesome postmodern freedom to believe whatever you want, you're just plain wrong. But then there's relativism, which is the basic worldview of postmodernism, which is really what our young people, that's the ocean that our young people swim in, folks. I'm telling you. A claim is made true for those who accept it by that very act of accepting it as true. So, there are two possibilities. Either truth is discovered, or truth is created. And if truth is discovered, then postmodernism is just plain wrong. Got it? If the postmodernist is right, then reality is a social construction. Truth is found in an accepted narrative, not by actually discovering actual truth. There's no universal transcultural standard for what is right morally or, yes. Consciousness is a social, not individual thing. Self is a construction. In other words, who you are is constructed, and they have the whole deconstruction thing. I am a man. I'm a scientist. I'm a, you know, whatever. These are things we create. They're not realities. They're created. Which, you know, it's not like there's no truth to that. However, is that true? Capital T. All truth is relative. Individual has no authority to determine what is true. Now, problems with postmodernism. Number one, it's self-refuting. Mr. Postmodernist, are you absolutely true that nothing is absolutely true? Yeah. Well, if nothing is absolutely true, then the statement that nothing is absolutely true is also not absolutely true. In fact, it's not true at all. All right, and then there's the authorial privilege thing, which is bogus. I, as an author, don't agree with that, but anyway. I don't care what they say, some things are just true. In other words, electrons exist, and electrons are attracted to protons by a force which can be measured. And I say, either God is real, or he's not. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm close-minded. But either God exists, or he doesn't. And if one person believes he doesn't exist, the other one believes that he does, one of them has got to be wrong. All right? If your culture told you it was safe to jump off a cliff, you want to try that out and see how it works? Another reason I believe postmodernism is patently false, and therefore a bad worldview, is the naturally convincing is science. The naturally convincing explanation of the success of science is that it is gaining a tightening grasp of an actual reality. The goal of scientific endeavor is to gain an understanding of the structure of the physical world. The conclusions are always tentative, but they're dictated by the way things actually are. So although scientific materialism is not truth, it's not a good worldview, it seems to be onto something. Bottom line is, postmodernism is a bunch of bunk. Okay? It does not agree with reality, with the world as it actually is. Now, our understanding of truth might be relative, but the truth itself is not. And besides, it does a terrible job of answering the questions we actually care about. Okay, because the bottom line is, what is our value? Depends. I mean, what is the purpose of life? Depends. Okay, you know, what about the nature of ultimate other? Okay, again, it does a terrible job of answering those questions. It says there is no answer. Or you make up your own answer, and that's good because you like it. And what about it being a good worldview? By the way, I would say postmodernism, I mean, makes a good person. And I would say the postmodernist who accepts that view is probably theoretically better than the atheist slash naturalist. However, if we accept postmodernism, which is a better culture, the Nazi Germany or, let's say, 19th century Christianity in America? What basis do we decide which is a better culture? If postmodernism is true, then sin is a cultural creation, and really the only sin really is to call something sinful. Well, that's a problem because I believe sin is real. Another problem with postmodernism, and this is something that most people are not aware of, and it's a very important point, which is the one anti-hero in postmodernism is the reformer, the person who calls for reform. In other words, the reformer says to a society and culture, you are wrong. You need to change. That's what Martin Luther King did. That's what Gandhi did. That's what think of the great heroes. I would put Jesus Christ among them. All of them said their culture was wrong. But the anti-hero in postmodernism is the reformer. Okay? Now, let's talk about our third worldview, which is the Christian worldview. I already presented this. However, I want to talk, because we're going to do, how am I doing on time, by the way? 807. Oh, I'm doing great. So I'm going to go about 10 more minutes, and I'm going to take a break. Good. All right, so I'm going to argue that the Christian worldview is true, that the Christian worldview provides awesome examples to that list of questions, and I'm going to provide not just rhetoric, but evidence that the Christian worldview is the superior worldview in terms of if you are consistent with this worldview, those qualities that we all agree everyone would be better off if they had are naturally created because somebody accepts this as their worldview. Okay, so anyway, this, we already saw this. The Christian worldview says the physical world is real, created, and good. By the way, this is in disagreement with pantheism, with dualism, etc. Okay, this is not accepted by our worldviews, and the question is it true? Number two, there exists a spiritual reality. Not everything is physical. There are spiritual realities as well. That God is the creator of these things. God is defined by certain qualities that we talked about. I didn't put that one in this list, but that was in our earlier list. Although the physical creation is good, all good, evil exists, evil is real, and evil is the result of human rebellion due to free will against the moral precepts of the Creator God. Okay? The question of evil is a difficult question, and one way to judge a worldview is to look at what it has to say about evil. We already talked about determinism or modernism, which says evil doesn't exist, and then postmodernism that says, well, you say it's evil, okay, great, so at least there's that. At least you can call something evil, but it's all relative. All right? Those who sin and rebel against God will be judged, so justice is a real thing, and the solution to this problem, of course, is Jesus Christ. Okay. I'm going to argue that the Christian worldview is true. What I mean by that is not because of the inspiration of the Bible or any of that kind of stuff. What I'm saying is these basic precepts are consistent with everything I know about reality. For example, yes, the universe is real. The physical universe is real. Of course, the modernists would agree with us on that. However, the pantheist would not. the Hindu, the Buddhist would not agree with that. Creation is good. Now, I understand that creation is good seems to be proved wrong by the existence of evil, but I say everything I know about the physical reality, it's all good. Okay, evil exists. Okay, again, I believe it does. I see genocide. I see what's going on in Sudan right now, the massacres in Darfur. I see what Hamas did to Israel just over a year ago. And I say these things are evil. They're not just unethical. They are evil. They're violations of basic moral law. Again, this is not true according to many worldviews. Got it? Despite what nationalists say, I believe there is also a spiritual idea. I have to say this is harder to prove than the first three truths there. But I would say everything I know about reality says, as Shakespeare said, there's more to this world than whatever. I can't remember this. I shouldn't have started that quote because I got it wrong, but I think it's in like Hamlet or something like that. All right. But the bottom line is consciousness is real. I exist. Love is an actual non-physical thing. There is a soul. There is a spirit. And I admit it's harder to provide solid proof for these things, but I believe reality is consistent with all these statements. And by the way, everything I know from science is consistent with everything I know from the Christian worldview. Okay, next, Christian worldview answers the big questions. How did I get here? We were created by God. Why am I here? So that God could love us, so that we could love him and glorify him. Where am I going? Well, hopefully to eternity in the right place. Why are you human beings able to comprehend the universe? That's a good question. Because God wants us to understand himself, and God reveals himself through the universe. Why is there pain and suffering, and why is there evil in the world? Now, that's one of those hard questions, which is the eighth week that I would have done if I was going to do an eighth week. But I believe that the Bible provides the best possible answer to why there's pain and suffering, because it's the result of evil, rebellion against God, and natural causes, etc. Okay. Christianity offers answers, satisfactory answers, consistent answers, and believable answers to all the big problems that human beings have. The problem of sin, problem of suffering, problem of evil, the problem of death. Now, I'm going to talk about Christianity making people good. Now, I want to list several things that exist in this world simply and only because a number of people accepted the Christian worldview as their worldview. I already argued earlier that science literally would not exist if it were not for Christianity. I showed you the basic presupposition of science, all of which come directly from the Bible. Also, I believe if it were not for the existence of Christianity, that slavery would exist nearly everywhere in the world. And only because of people who held very, very strongly to a Christian worldview was it ever abolished. We could mention William Wilberforce as an example. I believe civil rights are indirectly, but nevertheless, an effect that was brought into the world from the Christian concept of the dignity of the individual person. I believe women's rights would be in huge trouble if it were not for the influence of Christianity on this world. And also, I will note that Christian groups do a majority of all the benevolent work in the world, because the Christian view of suffering is that we need to apply compassion, that suffering is real, all right? It's not evil, but it needs to be responded with by compassion. And I could expand this list, but I would argue that most of the things that people in Asian countries and African countries and South American countries, you know, have kind of gained, if you will. I know colonialism is a problem. Okay, I got it. But colonialism brought a lot of things around the world that most people in the world actually like. And most of those are the direct result of the Christian worldview. It's not a simple question. I raise some issues that need some discussion. But in the big picture, I would say those who not only accept as true the Christian worldview, but live according to the Christian worldview would be kind, courageous, patient, loving, every single one of those qualities that all of us value, and that Christianity and arguably Judaism produce those qualities more efficiently than any other worldview. Bottom line, no doubt. Okay, now I wanna look at other worldviews here. The second session will be shorter than the first session. I wanna talk a little bit about pantheism. I wanna talk about, Islamic theism and these sorts of things. All right, but I'm going to take our break now. We're going to end the first session on time this time. So let's take a 5-minute break to do whatever, and then we'll take 5 minutes of questions at the end of that. So we'll start taking questions in about 5 minutes. In the meantime, we can just chat, just fellowship, hang out with each other. If you have a question, maybe hang on to it for 3 or 4 minutes. Hey, Ken, glad you made it. Good seeing you, Steve. Sarah, I gotta, you know, get to meet you in person sometime. And, Keenan, let me apologize again for not giving a good answer to your question. Melina, Martin. Yeah. Hi, Melina.
Hey, hello.
Hola, Sarah. No, what I said was, I have enough material to do one more week, but I've just executive decisioned that tonight is the last class. Yeah, so.
Oh, I'm so glad I made it.
Well, good. And the last class was gonna be on answering the hard questions. Questions like, what's the whole deal with Trinity? How's that work? Questions like, why are people getting killed in the Old Testament? I mean, what's up with that? What's up with the fact that the Bible never condemns slavery? And another question is, if God is so loving, why does he send people to hell? So that would be the session. I just finished teaching a series of classes on that for the West Coast School of Ministry. So what I'm going to do is they're going to post the materials and the audio at the same link for this class. So. Because, honestly, I'm ready to be done with this class. I've enjoyed it, but I'm ready to do something else on Thursday night for a little while. Okay?
Yeah. Are you speaking at a university soon, I think I saw?
Which university is that?
I don't know. Is it Merced? Are you going?
I did a talk about 4 weeks ago. 3.5 weeks ago, at UC Merced on history, archaeology, and the Bible. But I basically gave that presentation to y'all.
Okay. Yeah.
I speak at universities, you know, fairly often. Not quite as much in the last couple of years though. Being here in Merced has kind of messed me up. I'm sitting on my couch.
In what?
Just kidding. In Merced, California. It's a small city. Okay. City of 100,000. We moved here to plant a church. We chose this location because of the UC that's here. Merced is a rapidly growing community, and it has a university and a community college. We felt like we need to put a church here. So we moved up here to do that. We started with 3. We now have about 25. And so.
Praise the Lord. I'll be praying for growth in your church.
Or you could move up here if you like and join us. if you want to be part of a mission team. That's what Ken did. See Ken on the screen there? Yeah, Ken moved here to join our mission team. Ken, are you glad you did that?
Oh, it's awesome. I thought I would miss like the big city, like Disneyland, Hollywood, but no, not really. No, it's
I mean, I miss those things some. Honestly, I do miss those some. I'm not going to lie to you. But the fulfillingness... Go ahead, Ken.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if anyone works remotely, I mean, that's some of the quote-unquote good side effects of the situation we had a couple of years ago. Since people are working remotely, those are 100% remote. You know, check out Merced, check out some other mission teams.
Yeah.
It's always a lot of fun.
If you live in California, it's the cost of living here is much, much lower. Yeah. Same pay, much lower expenses. Good idea, right?
and plus, the entire UC policy was redone that if it's up to the manager and the director, yeah, people can work 100% remote. That's actually true.
Nice.
I think that's the biggest employer of the state, so.
The UC is the biggest employer in the state?
I believe so. I have a feeling I read that from a news article from a UC paper, so there's probably somebody.
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe single employer. For example, the entertainment industry employs more, you know, and the hospital, you know, so maybe, but as an individual entity, it might be. All right. Hey, we're not going to settle that one right now. So I'm going to take, if there are any, I'm going to take about 5 minutes worth of questions before I go back into finishing up my look at different worldviews. So any questions out there? How about you, Holly? How about Keenan? Hopefully I won't say, oh, I need to do some research on that one. Questions?
None on the material.
Questions on anything we've covered, and even not covered, as long as it's from a Christian kind of thing. Martin, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have one question. What happened to the Jesus body when he was resurrected?
Yes. What happened was he ascended. All right, he ascended.
So the human body is how to change in the heaven.
Okay. There are different views on what kind of body we will have in the resurrection in heaven. But I think it's become a generally most well-informed theologians who take a conservative biblical perspective, I believe that we'll have some sort of something like a physical body of some sort. And, you know, the idea of us going to heaven, actually, if you go to Revelation, it's heaven coming to us. And so, and if you read 1 Corinthians 15, it seems to apply that we'll have a different kind of body, but a physical body. And that physical body may not be governed by the laws of this universe here in the same way that it is now. I really don't know. But Jesus ascended. All right. Does that mean he, I don't know, disproved gravity or something like that? I don't know. Jesus was able to go into a room with the door closed. So what's that imply about his body? I'll just say that's a lot of speculation. All right, any other questions? There's a room somewhere where they might need to mute because of the background noise. Any other questions?
Yeah, John, I have a question, and I've heard about people with it. You know, I know I got this term wrong, but I heard people go to theology schools, and all of a sudden they come out with not believing in the Bible or so, or is that... I've heard something to that effect where, yeah, I'm not sure if you can.
Yeah, okay, let me talk about that. If you go to most mainstream Protestant schools of theology, if you go to, say, UCLA, Harvard, whatever school of theology, the large majority of people you're going to meet there literally don't believe in God. I'm not lying to you. Okay, and so 30 or 40 years ago, if you'd asked me, I would have said, don't study theology. It's dangerous. And I don't agree with that anymore. I've definitely changed my mind on that. But the data gives us some reason to actually feel that way, okay? All right, so why do these people become unbelievers? Because the administrators of these programs are unbelievers. And so, you know, and unfortunately there's this intimidation effect. I found that believers, when they go to these institutions, they find that they have to just sort of keep their mouth shut. For example, if you believe that Daniel was written, you know, in the 5th century, not the 2nd century BC, then you will be laughed out of the room, even though it's true. And there's just this culture, not in all schools of theology, definitely not, but in many of them, that rejects the basic presuppositions of Christianity. Sad but true. Yeah. So if you want to study theology, by the way, all Christians should study theology. Because theology is the study of God, right? Hello? And you do not need to attend a theology school to learn about theology. In fact, arguably the Bible would be sufficient. But I think listening to conservative theologians talk about the nature of God, I think that's a helpful thing. I don't think new Christians should be maybe doing that a whole lot. But somebody who's been a Christian as long as you have, Ken, might want to start reading some theological works. I'd be careful and understand that not everything you read is going to be true. Got it? I find studying theology to be very helpful.
All right, I'll continue to read Child's book and the book of Exodus.
Good.
That's a challenge.
Yeah, but Child, although he... By the way, this is a one-on-one conversation. We're both reading a commentary on Exodus. And Childs, being a typical scholar, he discusses all the theories that are out there. But if you read the basic sections, the last three or four sections on each chapter, that's really good stuff. Okay? So, you know what they say, eat the fish and spit out the bones. Some books are mainly bones, some books are mainly fish. I suggest the ones that are mainly fish. Okay, one more question, or should I get straight to my...
Dr. O?
Yes.
Yeah, my wife has a good question.
Okay, Keenan.
Hi. So first of all, I definitely agree with what you said. Am I speaking too low?
You're fine. You're fine. I just have to listen carefully.
So first of all, I appreciate what you said about the theology. I definitely had a... God's not dead experience in my psychology course. Anyway, my question though has to do with what would you say about the way I'm answering students? I'm a science teacher. When they ask questions about evolution, those of faith, they will sometimes, even as young as elementary, when I've taught them years ago, have questioned Darwinism and all those theories. How could, because they know I'm Christian. Some of them. How could someone accept that? Or how can you? I don't remember the exact wording, but here was my answer to them. This is a theory. As a science person, as the scientist, young studying scientist, you need to understand what scientists are saying. Here's what scientists say. Here's a theory. Creationism is a theory as well. And that's why I was referring to it. The faith at the moment in a way that they understood it. And that was it. But when I spoke to someone else about it, they did not agree with me comparing faith to creationist theory.
Yeah. Well, that's a broad question, and how we handle it would depend a fair amount on who's asking the question and which specific question they're asking. I pretty much dealt with this last week when I talked about evolution. At least I think so. I kind of gave my perspective. First of all, I don't have a problem with Charles Darwin. I do have a problem with Darwinism. Darwinism is a philosophy which Charles Darwin himself did not agree with, just so you know. So Darwinism is this idea that this evolution is a controlling influence in everything. All right, and so there's Darwinistic philosophy, Darwinistic cultural, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, evolution is a scientific theory which is consistent as a theory with nearly all the fossil and genetic evidence we have. Therefore, by definition, it is a good theory. In fact, when it comes to the question of origin of species, it's arguably the only real successful theory at explaining those things. Number one. Number two, I would say that the Bible gives credit to God for creating all species, but it doesn't tell us anything about how God did that. And the scientific evidence says at least part of the process, at least part of the process by which God created species includes this process that we know exists called evolution. All right? And then I would go on to say, however, it's worth bearing in mind that evolution is not a theory of the origin of life. It's a theory of the origin of species. And the Bible claims, and science agrees, that life itself was created. There is no natural explanation of life itself. And I would also say, and I'm reading a really good book on this. If I could send you the information on this book, Keenan. Basically refuting sort of the deistic evolutionary idea, because there's plenty of evidence from science that says basically bacteria to human beings is not just some random process, that God has indeed intervened not just in creating life, but in also determining the direction that what we call evolution took. So evolution is a good scientific theory, which at least in principle is not in direct conflict with anything the Bible teaches. And yet there's significant evidence, even from science, of God intervening in the creation of species. Okay? But Darwinism is a philosophy. And I have a big problem with Darwinism. All right? But I'm telling you, Darwin was not a Darwinist. All right?
Thank you. I definitely agree. Thank you.
All right. So now I'm going to go on and make some more progress. It's probably not going to advance anymore. Let's see. Okay. Yeah, it doesn't. I knew that would happen. So I have to stop and kind of essentially restart the PowerPoint so I can forward it. Sorry about that. Exit full screen, escape, close, okay, reopen, okay, good, and then come back on Zoom. Sorry about this. This seems to be a consistent problem. I don't know why. I'm pretty sure it's going to work now. Oh, yeah. So far we've analyzed three worldviews: determinism, materialism, postmodernism, and Christian theism. And I've defended the idea that Christian theism is vastly better by all the measures that we are using here. A lot of people say, oh, there's different ways to the same thing. There's there's the Buddhist path, there's Islam, there's Hinduism, mysticism, New Age. They're all pretty much the same thing, and they're all pretty much taken to the same place. That is garbage. That you cannot hold to a Buddhist worldview and say Christianity is a path to truth. And you cannot hold to the Christian worldview and say that Hinduism is an alternative path to the same truth. That is craziness. So, if Genesis 1:1 is true, then animism, polytheism, pantheism, dualism, naturalism, and debatably deism and postmodernism and every other ism is false. Right? Because it says in the beginning. That means there was a beginning. But pantheism requires that there be no beginning. I'll explain that. In the beginning, God. Okay, well then we have animism is gone, polytheism is gone, dualism is gone, naturalism is gone, maybe deism. All right, and begin, God created the heavens and the earth, etc. So conflicting worldviews cannot be accommodated with one another. Either biblical theism is true and answer the questions, you know, etc. So biblical theism is incompatible with these other worldviews. I don't care how many people say it, how often, it's just not true. So let's look at some other religions, other worldviews. Let's talk about pantheism. So I'm going to deal with Hinduism and then Buddhism very quickly. I'm not going to go very deep into them. And I'm going to talk about them. Hinduism and Buddhism essentially operate under the same worldview, although people debate that. Hinduism, the principal religion of India, it evolved. The religion itself evolved from polytheism, and it kind of swallowed pantheism. The actual religion of India is polytheistic, but the scriptures of Hinduism, the Bhagavad Gita, the Vedas, the Brahmaputras, the Upanishads, are really primarily the philosophy worldview of Hinduism primarily is pantheistic. So pantheism is the idea that God and the universe are the same, that God pervades the universe. The universe essentially is God. Okay? Nevertheless, there's a lot of pantheism in there. I'm not going to worry about that. So I'm going to deal with Hinduism as a form of pantheism. Got it? So there's a lot of words in the vocabulary of pantheism. Brahman, that's that universal reality, that universal soul. In Hinduism, God is not a person. Now, God creates these emanations, these, such as Krishna or Rama, etc. Another important word is Atman, which means soul. Now, soul has a different meaning in Hinduism, but Hinduism proposes the existence of soul. But soul is sort of an individually concreted thing, but the goal of Hinduism is for soul to be absorbed into the universe, into Brahman, to become one with the universe. Maya, that's a very important word in Hindu theology, and it means illusion. And according to the worldview of Hinduism, the physical world is only real in a sense. It's not ultimately real. And basically, it has different levels of cosmological realities. And the farther down those levels, the more physical you are, and therefore the less real it is. Ultimately, the physical world is an illusion, according to pantheism and according to Hinduism. And also, evil is not real. Evil is an illusion. The goal then, the purpose, if you will, of Hinduism is to escape the cycle of karma and reincarnation, to be absorbed into the universal soul. Basically, to no longer exist as an individual entity. The Hindu world view has one looking inward to find reality, not outward. In fact, denying outward reality. So, is it true? Well, Hindu cosmology is certainly not true. And Hindu cosmology is required by pantheism. So, there are a number of different Hindu cosmologies. The scriptures of Hinduism are complex and don't always agree with each other. But every Hindu cosmology has the idea of this, the wheel, right? This cosmic wheel. And reality is a series of creations, suspensions, destruction. Shiva destroys, Vishnu creates, Brahma sustains that idea. So, the physical world is not real, and it is not good, and evil is an illusion. All of those beliefs, I believe, are wrong. The universe certainly was created. You have to understand that pantheism requires an eternal universe, because the universe cannot create itself. And the universe does not have a God, a personal God separate from the creation, that God is part of creation. So every pantheistic cosmology, including that of Sikhism and Buddhism and all these, they all have an eternal reality, a creation, a destruction, and a recreation. Not true. And by the way, the physical world is real, and I say it's good. And evil ain't no illusion. I'm telling you that right now. So I would say there's more truth to Hindu concepts of reality than postmodernism, because at least it holds to something. And I would say Hindu teachings teach morality and ethics. And so again, it's a better worldview than our first two. Does it answer the important questions? Again, it does better than postmodernism or naturalism. All right? But basically, the individual has no inherent value in Hinduism. Got that, folks? And there's a lot of things that happen in the Indian culture that are very disturbing. Okay? The idea Sati, burning the wife with the husband, the idea that certain people are of lesser value and worth, all this stuff. All this is a natural result of the Hindu worldview. It says that evil is not real, and yet it is. Our purpose is essentially to not exist, etc. Does accepting this worldview make one a better person? Debatable. Better than naturalism. At least you got the idea of karma. And this idea of karma does provide some sort of motivation, I guess. Because if you want to escape that situation, you want to be a better person. And yet, in the end, Hinduism is a self-focused religion. You know, the whole thing with yoga. Who are you looking at? You're looking at yourself. You're finding God inside yourself. I tell you right now, you are not God. I am not God. I'm sorry. No. So it is a self-focused religion, and not so much as Buddhism, but it also teaches dispassion. Suffering is not real. No wonder Christians do a majority of the benevolent works that are done in India. Okay, now let's talk about Buddhism. Again, the basic presuppositions of Buddhism are fairly similar to that of Hinduism. Buddhism is the principal religion of Korea, Japan, Cambodia, Vietnam, Thailand, Myanmar, Sri Lanka, and arguably it's the largest religion of China, although that's kind of debatable. Roughly 400 million adherents. By the way, Hinduism has something like just over 1 billion adherents. It's around I think around 12-13% of the entire world's population. Buddhism is really a result of one human being, Siddhartha Gautama, reacting against both the extreme worldliness of Hinduism and the extreme asceticism of what became the Jain religion. So Buddha was trying to find a midfold path between extreme asceticism and extreme sort of physical stuff in Hinduism. All right. And by the way, I like Buddhism, honestly. And I like Buddha, mostly. Except for the fact that he abandoned his family in order to pursue his path. But it is, by the way, Buddha was officially atheist But I'm telling you, he's not atheist. If you look at his cosmology, everything he said tells you, without a doubt, I'm sorry, Buddha was a pantheist, okay? So he gave us the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. What he gave us was more of a philosophy of life than, in some ways, even than a religion. And if you look at his Four Noble Truths, there's some cool stuff there. The Four Noble Truths, suffering is not getting what one wants. In some ways, we kind of agree with that. The cause of suffering is desire, which leads to rebirth. All right? The way to end suffering is to end desire. The way to the path of ending desire and suffering is the Eightfold Path, which we'll see. But basically, Buddhism teaches dispassion, disconnection. It preaches removal from the world, which explains why most of the benevolent works done in Buddhist countries are done by Christians. By the way, there's some really nice, really caring Hindus and Buddhists. Don't get me wrong. And it's not like no Buddhist does any benevolent work. That'd be a gross exaggeration. Same with Hinduism. But the philosophy itself preaches disinvolvement. Removing yourself from emotions and from this physical world. Essentially to escape Atman into Brahman, although Buddhists don't use that same vocabulary. The Eightfold Path, right viewpoint, right values, right speech, right actions, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right meditation. I have no problem with those things. Okay, here's a Buddhist cosmology. I took this picture at a Buddhist temple in Cambodia. And again, those different things are different realities, these different worlds. The lower ones are more physical, the upper ones are more spiritual. And my question is, do these different levels of reality, do they even exist? The answer is no, they don't. And what do they teach? They teach that physical things are not real and that evil itself is not real. And are these different levels of reality, are they even real? The answer is, I don't think so. All right. Now, whether Buddhism is a pantheist or agnostic is somewhat debatable, but I say everything I know about what Buddha taught and what Buddhists believe says they're pantheists, okay? So the physical world is an illusion and it is not good. Those are both false statements. Suffering is an illusion. Whether that's a false statement or not, all I know is if you believe that, that gives you a great excuse to not take care of suffering. The cosmology is cyclic, which I already showed you, not true. The goal is to essentially not exist. Okay, is it true? Is the world really an illusion? The cosmology is refuted by science. Does it answer the important questions? Like Hinduism, I'd say it does a better job. All right, I believe it produces people who would tend to be peaceful, who would tend to be nonviolent, who would tend to be, I think, kind, although maybe not considerate. All right? Does it make one a better person? I would say Buddhism is a better religion than Hinduism. It's not as self-focused, but it's teaching that suffering is an illusion, and its goal, which is dispassion rather than compassion. I say, no, it does not. No, it does not. And like I said, most of the benevolent works done in Buddhist countries are done by Christians. All right. I want to talk about answering the question of evil, but I only have 10 minutes to go, and I want to talk about Islamic theology, and then we'll be done. Here's a quote from Surah 11, 114. Surely good deeds take away evil deeds. Now, I'll tell you this. The Islamic theology is essentially theistic. In fact, if you look at the Christian worldview, much that's found in the Christian worldview is also held by Muslims. They are theists. And so I would say the Muslim worldview is arguably the second best one there is, unless you count the Jewish worldview as separate from Christian, which it's not. So there's a lot to be said for the worldview of Islam. However, it is a works salvation religion, and that's a problem. Because, first of all, it's not true. Second of all, that's not good. I'm not going to talk about these different levels of kinds of sin. Teaches salvation by your own effort. It says that charity atones for sins. In Islam, we earn grace. In Islam, it's kind of like a little, you know, like a balance. All right, I go on a pilgrimage. Yeah. I tell a lie. Well, that's just a little sin. I commit adultery, also a little sin. I associate something with God. Okay. And so I'm telling you, the Muslim never really knows if they're right with God. In Islam, God is not so much loving as merciful. The word love is rarely associated with God in Islam, although mercy is associated with God all the time. So Islamic theism, we earn grace, we earn favor from Allah, we earn salvation, we earn paradise. In Islam, salvation is earned through the efforts of those who are pre-selected by Allah to inhabit a very sensual paradise. And Islam is very deterministic. In Islam, God is much more distant from us, much more distant. We approach him, you know, on our face. All right. And in Islam, one of the five pillars, by the way, of Islam is almsgiving. So the majority of benevolent works in Muslim countries are done by Muslims. And that's a good thing. That's better than these other worldviews. And let's just say it. However, in Islam, the alms can only be used to solve the benevolent needs of Muslims. Unless all the benevolent needs of Muslims are met, then you can meet other needs. But I'm telling you, they never will be met. So you're not going to find when there's, you know, a disaster in India, a disaster in Brazil, a disaster wherever, you're not going to find Muslim groups going there generally because they're not allowed to by their worldview. That's a problem. And also, it is, salvation is predestined. And it's got a hard predestination, kind of like Calvinism, rather than the Christian form of predestination, which is God predestines everyone to be saved. So who reaches out to whom? All right, that's a nude picture, so I'm going to go on there. Okay, great. Hey, it's right there in the Vatican, though, so right? Every other religion has us finding God and achieving God. The only exception is in Christianity or arguably Judaism. Okay, now, which is true? Which is better? I don't like the one on the left. Now, if it were true, I guess we'd have to just deal with it. It doesn't make us a better person, though. I'm telling you that right now. Okay, and Islam salvation, I think I already did this already. Yeah, salvation is earned through the efforts of those who are pre-selected by Allah. Yes, Christianity, salvation is granted by the grace of a loving God to those who, through faith and repentance and baptism, accept that love. The Islamic worldview, to summarize, is closer to the Christian worldview. But God is very distant. Allah determines everything, even who will choose to follow him. There's some surah to look that up if you want to see that. We say inshallah, right? They're inshallah. God's God willing. Is it true? Is Muhammad in fact a prophet? We could talk about that. I say he's certainly a false prophet. There's the doctrine of abrogation that says, oh, sometimes we change our mind and we have a different teaching. There's science errors in the Bible. There's the fact that the Quran is very clear in saying that Jesus was not raised from the dead and was not crucified, which he certainly was. Does it provide a strong motivation to helping others? I say definitely not. Are women respected? I say certainly not. The Muslim concept of jihad is problematic. So here we go. Final summary. I've not covered all worldviews, but the theologies of world religions are fundamentally and diametrically opposed to one another. Many paths of the same God is a ludicrous idea. The worldview of Christianity is radically different from all others. Not quite as much from Islam, but also from Islam. They can't both be right at the same time. The truth of the Bible is confirmed by many things. Okay, so let's call that a class. Okay, and let's come back. And I ended, 1 minute late, 8:56. So I'll take questions at this point. Go ahead and unmute if you want. I didn't cover dualism. I didn't cover polytheism.
Question, John?
Yeah.
Is Hinduism and, you talk about Hinduism and...
You'll need to speak up. It's the man up here.
And all those kind of, those religions older than Christianity? Older?
Older?
Yes.
Yeah. By the way, that one logical fallacy is older things are more likely to be right, just so you know. So that's one argument the Roman Catholic Church uses to prove that other forms of Christianity are false. But the answer is, Buddhism began in the 5th century BC, so it is older than Christianity, is younger than Judaism. It's hard to say the birth date for Hinduism, because Hinduism evolved from pre-existent religions, but something fairly close to what we'd call Hinduism was in place about 1000 BC. Okay, let me see. Sikhism comes from the 12th century AD. Islam comes from the early 7th century AD. Both of those emerged after Christianity. Let me see. Other world religions, Confucianism predates Christianity. Taoism predates Christianity. Again, the length of time something's in existence does not really determine whether it's true or good, but that's the answer to your question. So more recent than Christianity would include Baha'i, Sikhism, and Islam.
And Mormonism?
Well, all right. Mormons want to say they're Christian. All right. You know, obviously, you know, Mormonism is more recent. Mormonism is not Christianity, but, you know, everybody here knows that Joseph Smith lived in the 19th century. By the way, I've written a book on Mormonism. If you want to get a copy of it, it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, what is it called?
Mormonism. Something like Mormonism : What Does the Testimony Say? Something like that. I can't remember the title.
I'm reading that book.
Yeah, it's actually, it's very readable. It's not a really huge book. And I think, yeah, by the way, I gave a copy to my boss at Grossmont College. He was a Mormon. And a few months later, he came into my lab and said, guess what, John? He left Mormonism. I was a little nervous giving him the book since he was a Mormon. He's my boss, you know what I'm saying? But I thought, just give it. Yeah.
There's a good website on Mormonism. It's called Utah Light Ministries.
Yeah.
There's a ton of research on Mormonism.
Yeah.
One point I wanted to make, when I talk to atheists or naturalists, they always like to attack the assumptions of faith, but reality, every worldview has to make an assumption. This is what you're going to accept as true, and you can't prove it's true. It's an assumption.
And exactly.
One thing I always ask or tell them, can you prove randomness exists? They can't. I have not seen any proof that randomness exists. And I was wondering, what's your viewpoint on that?
It's like, it's also true you can't prove that God exists. So, proof is a funny word. All right.
Well, I know. You have to make assumptions no matter what.
Right.
For any world.
I agree with that.
My point was, prove to me randomness exists. That this is something that naturalists and atheists always assume to be true, that randomness does exist and we're all created randomly.
Right. That is a good argument, but I'd say be careful of the arguments you use, because they're going to say, prove to me that God exists, and you can't. So,
well, true. But my point to them, I says, every worldview has to make assumptions.
Correct.
They assume
right.
We're the only ones making assumptions.
Yeah.
So
right.
That's the point I make. And when they ask that, then they realize, wait a minute, they can't prove things either.
That's a great point. That's a great point, because that illustration with that BBC guy reveals the same idea, which is, it seems like atheists assume that they don't have to prove their assumptions, that they're obvious and they're not. So you're making a really good point. So if you're using that thing about randomness to show to them that it's an assumption that's not been proved, I say, great idea. Just when you do that, I suggest say this is true of all worldviews. Right. And like I said, the basic assumptions of this naturalist worldview is that the universe is governed by physical laws that are unchanging in time and place, which seems apparently, I guess, to be true, and that the only realities that are real are physical, which seems to not be true, you know, et cetera. Yeah. So they're assumptions that are accepted almost like a religious assumption is accepted. Yes.
And there's one worldview, well, it's rather new. I don't know if you've ever just encountered it, but there's this new theory coming out in science that we live in a virtual reality. And there's scientists that actually believe this.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like a modern take on, we're not going to call it creation. We're going to call it a virtual reality.
Yeah.
But have you encountered kind of?
I actually haven't, but you know, that's one of those things you kind of go, oh, come on, give me a break. Seriously? I mean, come on. you know the movie, what was that movie? It starred the guy who did The Pet Detective and all that sort of stuff. But
Ace Ventura?
Yeah, right. But the person, not the what's his name? What's his name?
Okay. Jim Carrey?
Jim Carrey. He did a movie in which he was living in this world, but it was all a created reality. He's actually on a TV show, and all the characters that he thinks are real they're just actors. Anybody seen that movie?
I saw that movie, yeah.
Yeah, I saw it.
And it's kind of a working out of this theory. Essentially, it's, and arguably The Matrix is another example of this idea. Yeah. It's kind of fun.
I was trying to think of that title the other day too.
Yeah, somebody's world. Anyway, Brian, my brain's not working right now, but yeah, that's an interesting idea. It's kind of fun to think about, actually. And I'm sure they really enjoy having their nice discussions, but in the end, it's a bunch of nonsense.
I sort of like it. Because I consider like the spiritual world or heaven the more real world. This
yeah.
is sort of like a playground, I guess, to test us out.
Yeah.
We'll see where we go.
Yeah, there's interesting ideas behind that, and I think I'd kind of enjoy having a discussion with somebody like that. Yeah. But it sounds like an ad hoc theory designed to push back on certain other ideas, but anyway, cool. All right, any questions or
yes.
comments, Steve?
Was that movie Truman?
Yes, thank you, Truman. Like the Truman Show, I think it was the Truman Show.
Yeah,
that is love that movie.
I had a question, John, or just because I was listening through the Old Testament here and Numbers and Deuteronomy,
mm-hmm.
and thinking about the Christian worldview, we have, we love our enemies, we pray for them, but then we got here, as people have taken possession of the land, there's a, seems like a local judgment by God to have them destroy all the people and take possession of the land. And it just trying to get my head around the worldview here of this.
Or maybe how these essentially what amounted to genocides, how's that consistent with the Christian worldview is, I think is maybe what you're really trying to get at. All right. I've got a PowerPoint ready to go on that. Let me see if I, why is my computer not working right now? Uh-oh.
Yeah. Uh-oh. He says you must destroy all the peoples.
Yeah.
And the,
yeah, I've got, let me see. I've got this PowerPoint. Here we go. Let me find it. Here we go. I've got a couple slides in which I deal with that. That was one of the questions I would have been answering, in this eighth session if we'd had one. So I'm going to take about 5 minutes to go ahead and provide, an answer, which may or may not be fully satisfactory. All right. So here we go. Going to go back and here we go. Slideshow from current slide. Good. Here's the section on Trinity, by the way. Section on Trinity, evil, all right, suffering. Oops.
And also back then they
Here we go.
There was a eye for eye, tooth for tooth.
Yeah.
You could murder somebody if they murdered somebody in your family.
Yeah, so here's an attempted response to the depictions of the reality of God asking the Jews to kill people in the Old Testament. Point number one, if you're not bothered by this on some level, I'm worried about you. And Steve, you're bothered about this. You should be. Number two, our being bothered by this is affected by the fact that we view death as something bad or evil. But from God's perspective, that's not true. The problem in life is not death. The problem in life is rebellion, sin, and separation. So a lot of our being bothered by that, and we should be bothered by it, by the way. I'm not saying we shouldn't be bothered by it. But a lot of that, if we look at it through God's perspective, we should bear in mind that people were killed per se in and of itself is not an evil. Number three, God is God and he has a right to judge unlike us. So whatever God did and asked the Jews to do in the Old Testament is no in any way justification for our as Christians doing it even remotely like this. Nevertheless, point number three, God is God and he has a right to judge. Number four, then there's the issue of the religion that was going on, the Amalekites, they worship Molech. And one of the chief forms of Molech worship was to throw your children into a fire to be burned. Other religious practices that were common throughout the Near East included Baal worship and Asherah worship and included essentially worshiping God by coming to a temple and having sex with a prostitute. These religions were not just wrong, they were disgusting and abominable. And God has a right to, as a jealous God, to want to do something about that. And point number five, then there's this situation for children who were innocent, and yet a child growing up in Amalek, a child growing up in a Molech worshiping culture, what chance did they have when they became adults to become a believer and to be saved? So I'm not saying yippee-skippy that those children were killed, but I would say that's one thing worth mentioning. Point number six, in the case of Amalek and the other Canaanites, God's love and his justice demanded action be taken. Point number seven, which you actually mentioned this yourself, Steve, is God had a plan. a plan to save humanity from their own self-destruction. It involved choosing a person and a people and a nation and giving them a place. And in order to have a place, you had to physically defend and take that place. Now, you could disagree with God's plan, but if you have a better plan than God's plan, I'd like you to propose God's plan. So God's plan was to save the world through a people and through prophets and covenant and finally a Messiah given to those people and the prophets and covenant. So although it is sinful to take the life of another in anger, out of self-motivation, taking the life of somebody is not inherently sinful. Murder is, but taking the life of somebody is not inherently sinful. If God chooses to use a person in his justice and judgment to do that, although I personally find that hard to accept and even disturbing, I don't think it is evil or wrong. Point number 9. Although God did give Israel a nation and therefore they had to defend themselves and they had to fight and have swords and stuff like that, they were never ever given authority to form empire, and they had never actually did. They had no standing army. They weren't even allowed to have a standing army. And there are many, many warnings about warfare in the Pentateuch, and all of them involve limiting the ability to make war. No cruelty. Even captives, although they were made slaves, were freed in the next generation. No rape, no abuse, etc. So, although I agree with you, Steve, that these things are, honestly, they're disturbing. But I believe that they're defendable from a Christian perspective. I want to suggest a book called God is Not a Moral Monster by Paul Copan, in which he deals with, not just with that question, but other related questions like slavery and stuff like that. He does a really good job. So it's Paul Copan, God is Not a Moral Monster, in which he directly raises these questions. He quotes the people who raised this, like Harris and Hitchens and all these people. I think he does a great job of answering the question. So Steve, that is a great question. And the problem is, even when I give you, I believe, what is a satisfactory answer, I find myself still in the same place. Which is, honestly, this bothers me.
I understand. Yeah, it is challenging, but we know, we trust that God is love. God is great. God is good, and he knows best, and he wanted us to learn from that.
Yeah, but the people who were killed. They didn't learn from it, so it's worth bearing in mind. Because not only is God all those things, he's also a just God. And he's a God who has wrath.
Yeah.
He's a jealous God. He's not just loving. He's also a jealous God and a God of justice. Okay?
Yeah, he wants us to fear him.
Yeah, he does. Because only if we fear him will we do what's right. I see a raised hand back there. Is that Marianella? I can't tell.
Thanks.
Yeah, I was listening to what is Steve's question, and also I am reading Second Chronicles right now, and reading about all how God got rid of people. They like you say, John disobeyed him, you know. If they were disobedient, rebellious, then you want to listen to it. So you don't hear me?
No, I'm actually waving to Holly's husband.
Oh, hi, John. Okay, anyway, my question is, like, when I'm going through reading that and say, well, you know, because it does cause you some struggle, right? Okay, God get rid of these, thousands of people, right?
Right.
And these people were evil. They were evil. I mean, they, you know, they So my question, I asked my question, okay, so how could God deal with this? There was no other way. At least Jesus Christ came to the world and there was a choice and other ways.
Yeah.
But back then, how could he teach us?
Yeah. Well, I would say not only are those people evil, but Marinella, I would say you are evil also.
Exactly.
And all of us are evil. Here's the thing. Exactly. Let me give a general answer to that question. See, God has a number of qualities. And the human tendency is to fixate on one of those qualities and elevate it above all the other qualities, and you always get in trouble. Augustine, he raised God's sovereignty above his other qualities, such as his love and his justice and that. And he produced what became Calvinism and the idea of total depravity and once saved, always saved. Now, our culture, although there are a number of Calvinists today, most Calvinists aren't really Calvinists. That's just what they're supposed to believe because that's what their, you know, their church tells them they're supposed to believe. But So Augustine in the early time of the Reformation, those people elevated God's sovereignty above his other qualities. In our current situation, which of God's qualities, let me list them, his omniscience, his omnipotence, his omnipresence, his justice, his holiness, his love, which of those qualities does a current version of Christianity in America lift far above all the others, virtually to the exclusion of all the others? Which one is it? Yes. So I'm telling you, you sitting there in that room have an unbalanced view of God. We have an unbalanced view of God. We cannot exaggerate God's love, but we commit the mistake of ignoring his holiness, his justice, the fact that he, I'm doing a study in Revelation right now on campus, and they're saying, how long, oh God, before you come and wipe these people out and just do them in? All right, now we have Romans 12 that says, I will avenge, I'll repay, and we are not to take part in these kinds of things. That's for God. But I believe when we're with God in eternity, we'll say to God, amen, you are right. You are right to refuse them access to you for eternity. So God, as a holy judge and person of justice, is a quality we don't hear about nearly enough in our churches. And I would include our churches as in our churches. And so, so one of the reasons you're feeling that is because probably you have an imbalanced view of God. As do I, probably, because all of us do.
Maybe it's the influence of how we've been raised thinking for many years. Is that possible?
It's not only possible, it's true. Yeah. I mean, when was the last time you heard a sermon series from the book of Ezekiel? Never.
I went to Ezekiel with you.
Right. I've taught on Ezekiel many times. I've preached my way through it. But most of our churches won't do it because to do that, you have to skip all these chapters, which you shouldn't be skipping. Okay? And so, So your question, and by the way, it's not just that. I mean, our uncomfortability with this is partly because God calls us to love, but not to judge, right? So there are certain parts of God's character which we should embrace personally. And there's parts of God's character which really we may not really need to embrace. such as the fact that he is the God of justice and he is the God of judgment, and we are not to judge, and we are not the ultimate determiners of justice. So maybe there's another reason why I think humans are find this difficult, because it's looking at an aspect of God that he's not asking us to partake in. Yeah.
Well, I think if we start, you know, judging others, then we're going to be judged even
right.
more.
So, right. And again, is that Romans 12, verse 9, wherever it is? Basically, leave justice to God. Leave judging to God. Absolutely. I totally believe in that. That's what the Bible teaches. Amen. Yes. However, having said that, that doesn't mean justice is not going to be done. And that does not mean that, for example, you know, maybe my sister will go to hell, you know, maybe. You know what I'm saying? And I don't like that at all. But like I said, I believe when we're in heaven, we will, with God, say, Amen, Lord. Just read Revelation, where those elders are saying, Amen, Lord, you are right and good in your judgments. Yeah. But me, sitting here as a human being, I don't have that emotion. I don't have that feeling. I'm just telling you right now. I do not feel that way, and I'm not trying to. So, you raised...
I'll have to think about
that. Yeah.
And when it takes class, John? Come on, John. You have a lot of knowledge. We are thirsty.
Well, if you go to my website, there's a class on Revelation.
Come
it's there.
On, John. Come on, John.
John, we like it like this. Face to face.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
I think people are good enough. I think they can... now do their own debates and probably do their own classes. I think we're ready, John. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, anyway, Ken was in this class. We just did it last night, right? And we were reading in, Revelation, Revelation 16, starting in verse 5. You are just in these judgments, O Holy One, you who are and who were, for they have shed the blood of your holy people and your prophets, and you have given them blood to drink as they deserve. They deserve it, they're saying. It's like, I don't have that thought or that feeling. But these guys, these elders up there in this picture in Revelation, yeah, there's several times where and David, you can read the imprecatory Psalms where David expresses the same idea. God, come and take those people out, man. Yeah. And I, like I said, I don't feel that way. I don't even want to feel that way. But I believe when we get to heaven with God, we will be one with him even in that. That's just my opinion. Okay? I know that's a lot to swallow as the last question that somebody asked, but you asked it. Okay?
Thanks, John. Thank you.
Yeah, you're awesome, John. Thank you for...
Thanks. We'll have another class in the spring, by the way.
What was the next class, John?
I'm not sure. I work with a group of teachers in the Southwest. Carrillo, Moretzky, and others, Kenny, and I probably won't be the teacher for that class. We might do one on the Sermon on the Mount. I'm not sure.
I love the Sermon on the Mount. Yeah. Yes.
So,
John,
well,
are you coming to San Diego?
I'm going to be there in November.
For Thanksgiving?
No. I'm teaching a class for the West Coast School of Ministry, I think the second weekend in November, maybe the third. I can't remember.
Okay. Let me know so you can come and see us.
Okay. I'm going to be in LA this weekend, but not in San Diego. All right. See y'all.
So you can have
thanks, John. Thank you, John.
Bye. Take care.
Hey, great last question, by the way.